The Turkish currency, the lira, rebounded slightly today after going into freefall following President Trump's announcement that the U.S. will double the tariffs on Turkish steel and aluminum because Turkey is refusing to release an American pastor being detained there. This is just the latest example of how the Trump administration has been flexing U.S. economic power to pressure other countries to change behavior. The U.S. is imposing new sanctions on Iran and Russia and is considering increasing tariffs on Chinese goods. Joining us now is Sebastian Malaby, who is the Paul Volcker Senior Fellow for International Economics at the Council on Foreign Relations. He's in London. Sebastian, welcome.
Great to be with you.
And do you think that Trump's use of tariffs and sanctions to put pressure on other countries to get what he wants is working?
Well, up to a point, there's no doubt that the U.S. has enormous power to inflict significant economic pain on other countries. This was true before President Trump was president. I mean, after all, Barack Obama led the allies in imposing sanctions on Iran's oil sector, and Iran's oil exports promptly fell by more than half. So this isn't a new thing, but the U.S. does have, I think, four distinct advantages in imposing this kind of economic pain on others. First, it's got the world's biggest economy measured by market exchange rates. Second, it's got an enormous current account deficit, so it's always importing more than it is exporting to the rest of the world. So there's more stuff that the U.S. can sanction than others can sanction the U.S., and you're seeing that in the China fight. Thirdly, the U.S. is extremely open to foreign investment, which means that any major global company has huge operations in the U.S. and therefore cannot afford to alienate the U.S. government. And finally, the central role of the dollar in the international payment system gives the U.S. a particular lever it can use to choke off payments to other countries.
I guess it's not so surprising to watch the U.S. wield its power in Turkey, a much smaller economy. But it's surprising to see what's happening with China, because this is the world's second largest economy in a fight economically with the world's first largest. And people have been saying for years, oh, China owns so many U.S. bonds, they would have a lot of cards in their deck if there were to be a fight like this. But it looks like the U.S. is saying, actually, you need us to buy all of your stuff. And if we're going to put tariffs on it, it's going to hurt you more.
Yes, I think that's right. I used to believe that by selling U.S. bonds, China could drive down the U.S. bond market, drive up interest rates, and cause a sort of Lehman-style financial crisis. I think the problem with that theory is that we've learned from the 2008-2009 experience just how powerful the Federal Reserve is. So if the Chinese were to dump enormous amounts of U.S. treasuries, the Fed could simply print money and buy them. And it's such an extreme thing for the Chinese to try and do that, you know, I'm not sure we've gotten to that level of tension for them even to be thinking about it. So you're right that when the war is confined to tariffs, the U.S. does have the upper hand because the U.S. is importing more from China than vice versa.
And what do you think the goal is when it comes to China from the Trump administration? Are they trying to weaken the government there, which is obsessed with their economy growing at a certain rate?
Well, that, I think, is where you get to the weakness of the Trump strategy. It's clear that Trump can inflict damage and economic pain on others, but will he get the political objectives he seeks? And that's actually a very different question. I think both with respect to China and with respect to, you know, Turkey or Iran. It seems to me that with China, if what Trump really wants is for the Chinese to give up their ambitions to take over the high-tech sector, I don't think the Chinese are going to give that up, no matter how much you put sanctions on them. Nor are they going to give up the Chinese Communist Party's monopoly on power. So it seems to me that although there can be the appearance of progress in the sense that you can put pain on the other side, whether you get your political desires is a different matter.
Do you think that in the case of Turkey, that the U.S. is going to get what it wants and have this pastor released?
On the one hand, it seems to me that releasing the pastor is sort of a small concession for the Turks to make. And when you balance that against the fact that their currency is in free fall, you know, any rational leader of Turkey would make that trade and do what the U.S. wants. The problem, though, is that it's not clear how economically rational Turkey's leadership really is. I mean, you've got, you know, the president, Erdogan, who's installed a relative of his to run the Turkish Central Bank, and who appears to think that, you know, if you raise interest rates, you'll create more inflation. And that's a view that's about as popular with economists as the notion that the world might be flat. So I think it's a bit unpredictable how this plays out just because of the obstinacy and the economic obtuseness of the Turkish leadership.
Now, Turkey is one thing. China is another. Then there are Trump's economic fights with our closest allies, with Canada and with Europe. What do you think are the benefits and risks of that?
Well, that's where it gets completely crazy to my mind. I mean, I understand that China is doing some things with respect to forcing technology transfer from Western companies to Chinese ones, which really don't count as playing by the rules, and sort of using pressure to try and force negotiations on getting China to change. That you can make a case for that. But when it comes to Europe or Canada, close allies, which are not obviously abusing any kind of rules, it really doesn't make any sense at all. And it's good that last month in July, the US seemed to de-escalate its fight, at least with the Europeans, and say that there would be no further trade sanctions placed on Europe, and even that the US would work with Europe to try to get some reforms to the World Trade Organization. So that was a good thing. On Canada, there's still this fight going on. It's sort of connected to the NAFTA negotiations. I don't think the cost-benefit on that from any strategic calculus is appealing.
Do you think that that's what this is about for Trump, that he is trying to flex the U.S. economic muscle as he goes through these NAFTA negotiations to say, you've got to play ball with us the way that we want to do it, because look how much it'll hurt you if you don't?
Yes. I mean, I think he does have the instinct in almost any relationship with any other country, and this goes for North Korea, where it's about nukes rather than trade as well. You know, there's this combination of playing tough and, you know, tweeting against the adversary and threatening them with annihilation and so forth, and then at the same time offering negotiation and this kind of, you know, good cop, bad cop mm-hmm. routine, but combined in the same cop all at once, seems to be the Trump negotiation method.
Can you think back to times when this has happened before to this degree?
I think the use of trade tools, trade sanctions, both for foreign policy reasons, like trying to contain Iran's nuclear program, and because of trade disputes. If you think back to the 1980s, a lot of trade sanctions on Japan because of its alleged violation of international trading norms. There's a long history of this. What's different this time is the way that Trump, in his first year, certainly unleashed this battle on all fronts and has continued this into his second year. That's the strange thing. It's kind of going after everybody at once. If you wanted seriously to take on Chinese abuses, you would first make nice with Canada, make nice with Europe, and build a global coalition to go after China and put pressure on them, instead of which Trump bashed everybody he could see and also went after China. And I think what's interesting to see in the next sort of 6 months or so is whether the de-escalation of tension with Europe is followed by a de-escalation also with Canada, and you start to see the emergence of a kind of coalition to single out a couple of targets, which might just be, for example, Chinese technology policies on the one hand and the Iranian nuclear ambition on the other.
But it sounds like what you're also saying is that there is a risk that because of the way that the U.S. is acting with other countries, it may be difficult to get that coalition together down the road when you need them.
Yes, I am saying that. And I'm saying that, you know, the question is whether Trump changes his tactics. He's done that a bit with Europe already. That has not happened with Canada, but it might do. And then you'd be, you know, moving into a zone where you could start to make a rational explanation for U.S. trade policy. I'm afraid I can't make that yet, but I'm not ruling out the possibility that it might be possible in 6 months' time.
That's Sebastian Mallaby, who is the Paul Volcker Senior Fellow for International Economics at the Council on Foreign Relations. Sebastian, thank you.
Nice to be talking to you.